today's segment of the Radio. Sponsored in part by Carbody Corporation. Easier global mobility for the car lover and traveler and pet lover on the go. Visit them today at facebook.com/thecarbuddy. Today's segment of the McGirt Show is also sponsored by Credit Repair Education Services of Garner, North Carolina, celebrating 16 years of restoring, rebuilding, and renewing consumers' credit as well as consumer advocacy, and rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau of North Carolina. Visit them today at facebook.com/groups/HG Law and youtube.com/TheMcGirt. You can reach them by phone at 910-813-8525 or by email at hglaw@ureach.com. You can get your credit restored today. We want to thank you for tuning into the McGirt Show today. Today, as we celebrate Martin Luther King weekend and holiday, those of you that have followed me on the McGirt Show for the last 8, going on 9 years, you as well as most anybody that knows me, I take civil rights and the life, legacy, and leadership of Dr. King very serious and very personal for me. And I want to give this tribute before we go into the show with the segment of me being a guest on Vamo Radio with Miss Vanessa out of Chicago, Illinois. I want to take a moment and just take a few moments to honor the life, legacy, and leadership of the late Dr. Martin Luther King, who through his life, through his sacrifice, through his actions, he changed the course of history from segregation and discrimination that was so blatant and in our face, and some things were so horrible. People were killed and lynched and burned and hung because of their race, not because of what they feel or believe they were, but because of their visible color of their skin. And I don't think so many today who are of a new generation, who are too young to remember or reflect or know anything about those years, truly understand what we as a people were dealing with during the time and the life and the moments that Dr. King walked this earth, of what he's dealing with. As you go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/BobbyDamelGird, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the social media avenues out there, there's not one social media page that you'll find that during this weekend and throughout the whole month of January, as we celebrate his birthday on this coming Monday and as Black History come up, that I fail to honor the life, legacy, and leadership of Dr. King. Now, some may ask, why is it that Dr. King seems to be the one that we have a national holiday for and seems to get more recognition than some of the others? And I don't think the purpose of it is not to ignore or to omit any of the others that helped him in the journey and those that worked alongside with him, those who stood for the same principles. However, my personal belief, and this is just my opinion based on history and the facts, that dream, that vision, that legacy, the journey that Dr. King laid out in August of 1963 in the March on Washington, that was close to probably 8 or 9 years before I ever was born. Not to mention the very night before his untimely death and assassination on April the 3rd, 1968, he gave us what I call a warning that he may not get there with us. But he told us, he said that we as a people will get to the promised land. And that promised land was equality, equal rights, justice. To be able to sit down as an African-American or a person of color in the front of the bus, in private class on an airplane, to be driven by a driver who is of another race, and open the door for you, to serve you dinner or breakfast at a restaurant without telling you to go in through the back. Get out. We don't serve niggers. And we don't remember and see the horrible signs that were on buildings at that time using the N-word. So as we celebrate and remember Dr. King, remember all that he stood for. He would have been 90 years old today. But he will never be forgotten for all the sacrifices that he withstood, all the things he endured, for the justice and the equality of a people that he would never live to meet. You are looking and listening at someone who will always cherish the legacy, the life, and leadership of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're going into the segment on the McGirt Show with Vamo Radio, where I was a guest on the Vamo Radio Show with Ms. Vanessa out of Chicago, Illinois. I wanted to take that time to just show my appreciation for a wonderful man that I never got a chance to meet due to the fact he was gone by the time I arrived here in the world on July 4th, 1971. But I would have been ever so honored to meet him and just sit and listen to some of the things that he had to say. And even as that last speech that he gave on the night of April 3rd, 1968, is over 50 years old, it is just as timeless as it is precious today as it was 50 years ago when he first made that powerful and enduring speech, warning us that he might not get there with us. But we as a people will get to the promised land. Let's go into that segment already in progress. The wonderful Miss Vanessa Morgan of Vamo Radio as the host, and I had the honor of being the guest on the McGirt Show.
Radio, Vanessa Morgan, and I am here with host, production partner, motivational speaker, and talk show host of the McGirt Show, Bonnie Dale McGirt himself. Hi, how are you?
How are you doing? Doing fine. Hope you are.
I am great. I'm so glad to be speaking with you today.
It's an honor to be here.
Thank you so much. So, Mr. McGirt, can you tell everyone about who you are and what you do?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm Bobby Dale McGirt, host of the McGirt Show Global Media. I'm a U.S. patented inventor of the Car Buddy and CEO of the Car Buddy Corporation, host of the McGirt Show Global Media. I'm the executive director of Credit Repair Education Services out of Ghana, as well as the evangelistic leader and executive director of International Outreach Ministry and Program for All People. And I founded the McGirt Cancer Awareness Initiative that helps combat the spread of cancer for male and females by distributing pre-screening information that will help catch the early detection of cancer in everybody, male or female.
That is the same. That is the same. I like that.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, I know that you are a national spokesperson at the Human Rights Movement. So, what led up to the event of you becoming a spokesperson for the cause at the same time?
That was a result of about 6 years ago, there were several Los Angeles social media followers of my talk show when I first started it. And they looked at everything that I was doing, and whenever a person goes to my social media, they'll notice that nothing on my media that I do or none of the programs or initiatives that I do involve bashing or judging or criticizing anybody. Everything that I do, it deals with advocacy, possibly civil rights, as well as motivation, empowering everybody on a non-judgmental basis, because, you know, you can get beat up in life as it is. So when people come to my site or they come to my social media, I aim to give them hope, joy, empowerment, encouragement, to let them know that whatever it is that they're dealing with, they can get up and go on. And And what happened, the few people that were following me from Los Angeles area, they were actually, to my surprise, they actually had formed the, or they were part of the Los Angeles chapter of the Human Rights Organization, and they nominated me to be the spokesperson for, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, my memory serves correct, it was for the 2014 and 15 term, and that's how it all happened.
Well, congratulations on that. That is amazing.
Thank you.
That is really amazing. Congratulations. I just feel that there aren't many people in today's time that stands up for human rights. And I really commend you on actually taking action to something this big and for people who actually use race with such things to act upon it, you to actually have the power, the drive to actually act upon things of such a good nature and actually be a huge success with it, really. That is amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
And I also understand that you were a media analyst at the White House Press Secretary and a member of the White House Media Press Corps. You know what? That is a really great position that you hold. How do you feel about being a part of something like this?
Oh, my God, that is probably a moment in my life that I will cherish until I leave this world. That happened during President Obama's administration, and I remember when my producer had sent over my bio and everything that I'm doing, and I had also wrote probably almost 20 or 40-some letters to President Obama telling how proud I was of him, and the fact that I had the honor of, when he came to Raleigh in May of 2008, as many people, when you go to my Facebook page, you'll see the pictures as well as the video of me grinning from ear to ear. I had a chance to actually shake his hand. And that was the night when I became an official President Obama fan of his. And when he shook my hand and held it to his heart between his I'm not ashamed to admit, I cried like a spanked child.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I did. I lost it. I had just jokingly told the lady behind me, I said, if he was in Raleigh, the Dorton Arena. At that time, he was a candidate, and then we were so inspired by him running as the first African-American candidate. And by that time he had come to us, he had already won the Iowa caucus, so we knew it was on and popping.
Right.
And I told the lady beside me, didn't know the lady, we were just cheering each other on, because we were excited to be there on the front row. And like I said, you go to my media on Facebook, you'll see that picture of me standing there. You also see the video of me from the local news station here in North Carolina. I'm sitting on the front row to President Obama's right. And I'm jumping up, hollering and everything he said. I don't even know what he said. And to make a long story short, that's where it kind of, it all started. I started writing. When he got in the White House, won the election, I began to write letters of how much I appreciate him taking that chance, that audacity of hope. And then next thing I know, I received a letter from the White House, which is also on my social media, a White House stationery commemorating me for 25 years of being in community outreach ministry, which I like to faint it when I got it. That was another honor. And then what I did when we got the notification that he was going to be in Charlotte, I asked my producer to ask the press secretary, what do I need to do to be a part of the White House media press pool to be able to cover any events that President Obama was doing? And so he sent me the information I had to comply with, and that happened in, I believe it was June of 2000, I want to say 14, if my memory serves me correctly. And I tell you, you could have just blew me over with a feather. And what I did, I posted what little bit I could because of security reasons. The first credential pass that I got, it was when President Obama came into Charlotte. It was for a women's equal pay movement that he was a part of. He was going to be the speaker there. And that was the first event that I was able to attend and cover as an official member of the White House media press pool. I actually still have the documentation from that packet showing that I was getting it directly from the press secretary of the White House under his administration, which I also have put a lot of that stuff is on my social media because, you know, a lot of times people think you're making this stuff up.
Right.
And sometimes people do make it up, but in my case, I wanted to put everything on social media that I received that they allowed me to release. Some things you couldn't put on there at that time because of the security around it. But some of the documentation I was able to put on there to let people know this has actually happened to me in this moment in history.
Right. That is amazing.
It is.
That is an amazing thing to go through and actually mentally, physically, and emotionally.
Yes.
Like that power. And I know I understand. Actually, I can't say that because I haven't met him, but like the emotion that you're going through at that time when you're so passionate about something and then you actually meet someone who is even passionate about the same things you are and you're rooting for them and they're rooting for you and it's just an amazing feeling. Like nothing can top that.
Yes.
That is amazing.
And you know how a lot of guys, you know, because we were taught as guys, you know, guys don't cry or whatever. Well, let me tell you something. That night in May of 2008 when he came here as a candidate and he walks in front of us, matter of fact, before, and I was raised like that, no cry. Men don't cry, don't do this, don't do because I've been known not to be a crier. But that particular night, I lost it. The Secret Service had come in front of him, and they were telling us, you know, you can't hold stuff a certain way. And we were like, yeah, man, come on, get out of the way, because we see him coming towards us. And next thing I know, he's standing in front of me. I'm sort of a lot shorter than him. I'm only 5'10". He's like 6'2", I believe, maybe 6'1", 6'2". I'm looking at his chest. I couldn't even hardly look him in the face. I was so excited to know this man is holding my hand, shaking it. But what made me really lose it was he didn't just shake my hand. After he shook my hand, as he's shaking my hand, he's asking me, how am I doing this evening? And I got ready to say I'm fine. He takes my small hand compared to his long fingers and hands and sandwiches between his and put it on his heart. That's when I cried like he asked me to go to the prom. That's when I boo-hooed. I mean, I was boo-hooing. Like, I told him, I said, I'm fine. So I told my devil, I will never forget that as long as I live, and I'm not ashamed to admit. I cried, I boo-hooed, I didn't wash my hair for almost 2 days. Because as a matter of fact, when I got in the car, you couldn't hardly get out of it because the parking lot was so packed. It was almost an hour before I could get out of it because of the crowd. I just sat there looking at my right hand.
Well,
I'm just being honest. A lot of folks wouldn't tell it. Like, I'm telling you, I didn't have nothing to hide. I was proud of that moment in history. I'm shaking the hand of a man that's a trailblazer, that's making history as the first serious African-American candidate that has won the Iowa caucus. And I sat there looking at my hand, didn't know this man touched me. And I'm proud of it. And I'll never forget it. And I know a lot of people have probably can share that same expression. If you've ever been to one of the rallies and he's ever shook your hand or spoke to you, you want to almost faint.
Wow. That is very emotional. That is extremely emotional for me both of them.
Yes.
And, you know, actually, speaking of something very emotional as well, I also want to mention from a personal point of view how you transformed your life from tragic events that you've encountered, such as the abandonment of your father, who chose a separate path for family. Would you like to express or share anything about the emotional time in your life?
Most definitely, because I know there are a lot of people like myself who either they don't have a mom or a dad in their life like they should have been. And I think a lot of times you always ask yourself, why? What did I do or what did I not do or what? You know, who does that to a child? What happened to me was my dad left me on the front step of what was my biological sister's grandmother. We have two different dads. And so my dad stops by my sister's grandmother's house and left me on her front porch with a diaper bag beside me. And I guess he rang the doorbell and then just left, got in the car on the way to Maryland with the woman that he was, I guess, dating or seeing. I couldn't have been no more than probably 3 years old, according to my mom and according to my sister's late grandmother. She's passed now, so is my mom. But that was the story that happened. And my father did not come back into my life till now about the last 3 years of high school. He would do one of those throughout my younger years, adolescence, leading up to high school. You know, they would do those trips where a lot of you that are listening can relate to. They come by once every 90 days, 6 months, take you shopping, maybe take you out to eat, and let you know they still your daddy. It was one of those type of visits. But as far as being in my life and giving me that, those moments that money couldn't buy, I don't have those moments with my dad.
That is very sad.
And for a long time, I harbored a disgust, because I feel like, you know, anybody that produces a child, be it male, female, that's not a right. That's an honor. That's an honor, because you're creating a human life that didn't ask to come here. And whether you're rich, poor, or middle class, no class, whatever, you owe it to that child to be there. And so what I did is I used the fact that, like my mom used to say, I've always been kind of stubborn. I used the fact that life had gave me a bag of lemons. I turned it into lemonade and making this vow to myself that if I was to ever mentor or bring a child in this world, I would never abandon that child. Never.
That is really so touching. You know what? To not being something like that that you went through, you created so much success from that. From the time that you were down, the act brought you something, so many great things in your life and accomplishments as well. Congratulations on that, and I do think you're that as well. So, Ms. Whitaker, with you having so many accomplishments under your name, including everything you mentioned earlier, how do you manage to keep all of it intact, as well as hosting a talk show, the great show that has social media followers in over 70,000 countries now, and over 300 tweets sent each week?
That's a good question, because sometimes you have to make sure you keep your sanity. that is a very good question. How do I keep it? You know, I'm going to be honest with you. It takes me back to when my pastor, I had to been around about, I was fresh out of college. I was about 22 years old. I had just become an associate minister at the church at that time. He chose me to be a Sunday school teacher and youth leader. And what I noticed was when I took over behind a couple, there was an older couple that was currently over the youth department in that class, and some of the instructors and some of the parents were saying that the teachers didn't have any motivation. I'm sort of going into that to kind of answer your question, to kind of give you some history on how all of the chemistry, or the energy, should I say, for me to do what I'm doing now started. And so when I took over, they were not motivated. The attendance was low. Some of them were not really interested in what they had to say, because what happened, I ended up sitting in on the class twice under the other teachers, and I noticed they weren't really listening. They were holding their head down on the class desk, and then my pastor selected me to take over because I had just transferred from a sister church to that church. And I noticed in about 2 months' time, we were outgrowing every classroom that they put us in. The first room we was in, we outgrew it. Then they put us in another room, a larger room. We outgrew it. And the reason I realized was what I did, when I saw that a lot of them were like me, they came from single-family homes. They didn't have dads in their life. They had issues at school. They had issues with their personal life. So what I did, I devised a way to use what I was supposed to do as a Sunday school teacher. I made it fun, and then I would do things like whoever brings the most people to Sunday school, I'll give you a whole box of Little Debbie snack cakes. And, man, that's how we exploded. Next thing you know, our class was always getting the attendance banner. We were always getting the memory verse banner. And so then I would do stuff like, I said, I tell you what, if my class, if y'all do good on the memory verse means they had to memorize it and get up and say it in the sanctuary. And, man, they would come out there and they would say it just you see these college groups that know how to stomp. You know, they say it with power.
Right.
And so we got back in the room, what I would do, I would surprise them. I would give everybody their own box of Little Debbie brownies or chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, gosh.
So what I did, I made it in, and then I remember there were several of the parents, they said, let me tell you something. They said, my son, he gets up for church before I get up. And he's already ready to come out for me to come home.
Wow, now that is great. That is sick.
And that's where I would probably say my energy started, where, you know, my mission to not be focused on the fact that I was abandoned, but be that conduit for joy and victory and energy for those who are like me, who they didn't have the same thing I didn't have, but being responsible for these kids, let them know I'm there for them, and I want to bring that joy to them. And that's how it happened. Next thing you know, they had given us this. We had another little building that they called the children's church. We had outgrown the two classes that we were using in the hallway, so they moved us into this little building outside the back. It was built like a little church. We outgrew that, so they moved us into the print shop.
Okay.
So I'm proud of the fact when I saw that, and some of my students have reconnected with the principal. Some of them are grown, they got families, and some it's just joy to your heart when they. I had one reach out to me. He said, I bet you don't remember who I am. He said, I'm one of your students that I used to love to get up and do the summary every Sunday because you always made it fun. And that means the world when 20 years later somebody can reconnect with you and they never forgot the positive impact that you made on their life. That's when I begin to realize that somebody counted on me,
right,
to be that. And I don't mean to say that like, you know, they're worshiping or nothing like that. I'm saying that they're depending on me to help make their day or help get them through that tough time. And I think to answer your question, that's what helps me keep going.
You know what? That's actually a really great lesson that we taught. It's something that began to believe that doesn't have an effect on something. It's just all through a dream level or whatever. So how you made it, how it began, mm-hmm. coming something successful, like he was just growing up, and actually it takes that dedication that you have,
mm-hmm.
that was growing,
mm-hmm.
actually pass your word and pass your knowledge on to other people,
mm-hmm.
which is a
mm-hmm.
you have. I'm really glad that we're working with someone like you. So you are an amazing person. We're glad for you.
I'm indeed honored. It means so much because when I look back on it, and like I said, a lot of those students, they're from Goldsboro, North Carolina. That's where the church was at that time that I was a part of. Those students, they're grown men and women now. They have families, but they found me on Facebook, and a lot of them, they would say, I bet you don't remember who I am. I said, well, I said, your face looked familiar, but when I saw you from Goldsboro, I said, you're one of my youth students. They said, yes. That means the world. It means so much because there's a whole lot of ways you can touch people that you're not biologically related to, but every one of those students can let you know they were like my children.
Yes, that's beautiful.
They were like my children, and they know that they had a friend with Bobby McGirt.
And you know what? Actually, with that also, sometimes they're not even in charge, or you're not and your intention of encouraging someone, you just being yourself.
Yeah.
And being the moving person. How much is the blessing for other people recognize that in you, and they recognize the positivity, and they see that as they came back, which is really beautiful to hear.
Yes. So true. And my staff can verify that because they get on me all the time. Sometimes they don't want me going to lunch by myself because I come back with 4 or 5 Facebook, Twitter profiles of people I don't even know. But all it can, it may start over how good the food is. It may start over the weather. And they say, you know, they're talking and we done hugged in the parking lot 4 or 5 times. And they be grumbling, where did he come on here? Let's go. You know. And so they got.